Chapter 16. Almost against my will, I turned into a good employee that summer, a good, quick filler-up pump jockey able to wipe a window, check the oil, and polish a pair of headlights before the automatic shut-off click had spit a dribble of gasoline up into the air. I rode my bike at top speed to work first thing in the morning, working my legs until they ached and my lungs felt hot spikes of pain from pushing myself. I worked until noon and then ate a couple of ham or liverwurst sandwiches with a pair of greasy fists while I sat around the station office listening to Bud Guilfoyle tell fishing stories or dirty jokes. Then I raced home as fast as my legs could get me there, and I went windsurfing. Weather didn't matter. If there was only a trace of air, I drifted lazily around the harbor. If there was a hurricane, I was out there, rip-snorting with the waves, pushing my board, making myself stretch the limits of my ability. Some days, if the waves were breaking out on the sandbar, I took the seat and learned everything there was to learn about riding a sailboard on waves. I could dance across the face of a long green wall. I could tuck hard into the freight train collapsing ridge of water, and I could vault up into the sky, straight over any piece of water the Atlantic could throw at me. Once I got hammered in the side of my head with my board, when I wiped out and came up seeing stars, once my sail got cracked hard by a collapsing wave and I broke my mast, it was a long paddle home, but the tide was with me. And that night, I learned the art of fiberglass repair. But the whole while, those 2 weeks of work and play were totally empty of anything that resembled real life. If you think I took any satisfaction from my work or had any fun on the water, you're wrong. I was just going through the motions. Marina and her mother had gone back to their old hometown of Culverton the day after the funeral. I woke to find Jack outside my back door in my makeshift cage. Marina had returned him and left me a note. My mom and I need to get away from here for a while. We might be moving back to Culverton. We're going to stay with my aunt up there while my mom looks around for work. Who knows what happens from here? Take good care of Jack. On top of the cage was the artificial wing, but it was broken in 3 pieces. I think I understood what it meant. Marina had tried to get Jack to fly again and he'd crashed. Jack looked like he was okay. After all, he was a tough old bird. But I could picture in my mind how Marina must have felt. And now Jack, once again with a single wing and no chance of flying, was back with me. All my efforts to track down Marina and her mom failed. The post office lady wouldn't tell me a forwarding address. The funeral director knew nothing. I sent Marina letters to her old address in hopes that they would find their way to her. But time slipped by and I received no answer. And life went on. I got a raise. I could have turned into a windsurfing pro and I could have won a national trophy in cross-country bike racing. But it was life in a dead zone. When a family came to look at our house and stand in awe at the view of the sunset from our back porch, I didn't even care. I didn't even bother to sabotage the deal with my prepared speech. And guess what, folks? You have your very own landfill and incinerator just 2 miles up the harbor from here. What more could you ask for? Nope, I didn't say a word. In the end, it turned out that they didn't have enough money for a down payment. They were just looking around. But the evening left my whole family feeling like we had been invaded. I think my father felt it the worst. They kept talking about our house, like it was just some sort of thing. He was in a huff after they left. Ed Keller showed up one night. "I'm sorry to hear about Bill Rearson," he said. "I'll miss him. He was a good stick handler in his day." "Why didn't you come to the funeral?" I asked, remembering how few people had been there. I think it had made Marina and her mom feel more than ever like outsiders. "I'm not good around death," Ed admitted. "I don't have the stomach for it." "That's too bad," I said sarcastically. Ed had been nice to Marina and me, but he hadn't got us anywhere. He was just a politician and a gutless one at that. I could see Ed was trying to ignore my words. I came to tell you that I followed up on your complaint about the landfill. I'm not saying they did anything wrong, but I can tell you that they are going to clean up their act. They have to, now that they have the new contract with Dial. I was wishing that he couldn't remind me of that. Importing waste from away to burn at Rocky Harbor meant more smoke in the air, more lethal ash that wouldn't be looked after properly. The first barge arrives in 2 days. I know you don't see it from our point of view, but it's a big step forward, he said, trying to sound convincing. How do you figure that? I challenged him. Well, we get to help rid the environment of chemicals that up to now have just been sitting around posing a health threat to people. I wanted to say a lot just then. I wanted to tell him about Mr. Reerson and his years at Dial Chemical and how Dial had refused to own up to any of the dangers he had been exposed to. I wanted to tell him that I didn't trust Gibson or anybody working at the landfill, that I didn't trust the regional authority, and that I thought all his talk was a croak. How can you be hauling in the stuff when the second incinerator isn't even built yet? Maybe it is a trifle early, but work is already underway, and the government wharf is now in shape to handle the unloading. Everyone agreed that the waste would be safer on our site than at its current location right in the city there in Culverton. It seemed like a good idea to start shipping the stuff now. It would show real commitment from everyone involved. If you could only see the big picture, I think you'd agree that we are doing what's best for people and the environment. I really wanted to flip out on this guy. All he had were words, and with these words, he tried to make people think that they were all heroes for importing toxic waste to Rocky Harbor. Look, I said, the incinerator that's already there isn't even safe for burning trash. Maybe there is a way to burn the stuff safely, but not there, not with the equipment. Why should I believe the next burner you put in is going to be safe? Ed was cool. We've hired experts, consultants. They assured us it would be safe. Don't you really think I'd let this happen if I could, it was otherwise? Besides, it means more jobs and more revenue coming into the county, so we won't have to raise property taxes. Those guys always tell you what you want to hear. I guess Keller decided not to argue with me on that one. Instead, he said, you know, you could get in big trouble for forging that lab report. I didn't forge it. If I had the money for a lawyer, I could probably prove it, but what would it matter anyway? You're lucky Gibson or even Quality Labs didn't want to press charges. Let them try. In his own way, I guess Ed thought he was trying to do the right thing. I admire your cockiness, he said. I was like that once. Yeah? Then what happened? I guess I just grew up, that's all. It'll happen to you too. Just don't let your emotions make you do something dumb. Just what I needed, a lecture from Ed Keller. What did you come over here for anyway? I just wanted you to know that I took your concerns seriously. I checked into everything. There's no leaking of anything from the dump site. Everything is okay with the incinerator, and the new system will be nothing less than state of art. I asked hard questions of Gibson and the consultants involved. I didn't just do it for you, but for Bill, too, and his daughter. And I wanted you to know that everything is above board. No animals are going to die. Nobody is going to get sick. In fact, no one will ever even notice anything different around here. Ed got in his car and drove off. I realized what he was trying to tell me about growing up. The trick was to stop worrying, stop noticing. Just stick your head in the sand and pretend that everything was going to be okay. I went over and fed Jack some fish scraps left over from dinner. After he had gulped them down, I reached in and pickled him up. I let him clamp his beak hard onto my finger, and it hurt like hell, but I didn't pull away. In fact, I liked the pain, like my angry confrontation with Ed Keller. It reminded me that I was still alive after all.